Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we will be presenting two great guests. First of all, Tom Dowd will be talking about his great new book, The Time Management Manifesto. Tom has been on the show before, and he is from Tom Dowd Professional Development and Coaching, LLC. Then we're going to be talking to Susan Dench, and she's going to be talking about her new book, Connect Working, The Savvy Women's Guide to Turning Small Business into Big Business. So let's start with Tom. Tom has been a frequent guest here on the HR Power Hour, but we have him back because he has a new book. That's right, a new book called Time Management Manifesto. That's right, Tom has got another book, and we know it's going to be great because I know that Tom's last book was great. Tom, welcome to the show.
Dave, thank you. I appreciate that's an endorsement.
Well, you know, it was. It was really good because I was in the preview of the last book, but that's okay. I'm not hurt that I'm not in the preview of this book. It's okay. So I'm just giving you a hard time. You know how that is. So how have you been? You know, you're back with this new job you've had now for about a year, correct?
Yeah, it's been great. The last book, Displacement Day, when my job was looking for a job, really paid off. I've been with an organization in Maine for well over a year. Full-time job. I love it. I love my boss, love what they do for customers, love what they do for their employees, and when you hook up with the right company that not only encourage people personal and professional development, you know, like you really got to appreciate an organization like that, which led me to this last book, Time Management Manifesto. They've obviously not giving me the time to write it, but you know, they gave me the encouragement and support to say whatever you learn as you're developing on the outside is going to help you on the inside. So I wrote it in the mornings and weekends, wrote it at night when my children were doing their homework. I was doing mine.
No, that's great. And this is really about expert strategies to create an effective work-life balance. I know there are a lot of people listening to this show today that say, work-life balance, wouldn't that be nice? What do you say about is it about the person's individual choices? Is it about what they do? Tell me a little about what made you think about writing this book.
Well, it starts by being anal retentive, but it really doesn't end there. And you know, I grew up as a fairly decent with my time management. But I was having a roller coaster ride professionally. If you remember from our very first conversation together, the first book, The Transformation of a Doubting Thomas, you know, talks about my roller coaster ride professionally. And I had personal issues in trying to figure out who I wanted to be within the organization. But there's one thing I always said is, you know, when I wasn't getting promoted, I would always say, no one will ever blame me or say I'm not getting the job done. So I always concentrated on getting the job done. So I actually focused most of my prioritization on getting the work done. What I didn't do, and this is what I found out later in life, is how powerful people are in time management. And they are the priority in everything. If you have your inbox and you die, it's not going to go away.
You're right.
It's not going to be, the things aren't going to get done. And that's what I had a tendency to not remember as I was doing this. And then you start figuring out as you build these relationships, you start delegating. You start setting expectations for each other. Even the simplest, you talked about, is it an individual choice? It absolutely is. You just have to understand the ramifications of ignoring that email or ramifications of taking one priority over another. You know, it all comes down to, you know, a lot of it is communication. Are you having the right conversations with your boss? Are you setting the right expectations? There was this woman, she and I we were never on the same page when it came to project management. And I realized it's because I would send a note to her through email and never hear anything back from her. And it would go back and forth, and I would get frustrated. I'm duplicating my efforts. I'm trying to get a hold of her throughout the day. And then I sent her one instant message. And she said, yeah, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And I realized you have to work within the parameters of the people you're dealing with and say, hey, how do you prefer to be communicated with? And that simple question saved time, and we became extremely very efficient time management partners together.
You know, that's so true. And, you know, this even goes back to career searching. We have been saying for years, you have to communicate or network with people on their turf. So if they are cell phone users, texters, IMers, Facebookers, LinkedIners, you have to be there and figure that out. What is the best way? Ask the question. When you're networking with someone and they're referring you to somebody else, you simply ask, hey, how's the best way to connect with them? And they will usually tell you. It's not what you think. It's not email all the time. It's not phone call, but it might be. You just never know what that is. So you're absolutely correct on time management is effective across the board, no matter what you're doing. Figuring out the best way to communicate will save time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you say here, manage your time, don't let your time manage you. What do you mean by that?
We are a reactive world these days. We sit around with a catcher's mitt waiting for the next email to come in so we can react to it. And therefore, we are a slave to our email. Our power went out this past weekend because of the snowstorm. And to watch my three teenage daughters as they're trying to figure out, we lost our internet for 3 days.
Oh, that's like the worst thing ever. Ever, Dad. Come
and
on.
So all of a sudden, you can't text your friends. You can't email. And you don't realize how much control we allow to leave from us. We have control of our calendars. We have control of our time. We have control of what time we go to sleep, what time we wake up. But we blame the boss. You know, we say the boss is throwing too much work our way. We're juggling too many things, too many balls in the air, dot, dot, dot. But in reality, when we talk about what we have control of, is you can control having a good night's sleep most of the time. And if you get enough rest, you're going to hit the day all charged up, ready to go. You're going to have more energy to get more done. You know, there is there's a saying that says, schedule your lunch. You know, we have this mentality of, no, I have to work through my lunch or someone else is going to get the credit for the work that I'm doing. And, you know, I can't leave my desk. Sure you can. Although my boss, I hope he's not listening, I don't work more than 40 hours a week most of the time. But I bet I get more than what a lot of people do in 50 or 60 or 70 hours. And it's about commitment. It's about routine. If you set up the right routines, if you block the things that are taking your time, block off and account for them. You know, fire drills, for example. You know, the term fire drills meaning you have to do something in the day that you did not originally schedule it for.
Oh, come on. That never happens, Tom.
No, never. Fire drill, I don't even know what that means. But there are ways to account for that, and so I have some solutions. And an example would be, let's say you and I have a business meeting together, and we feel our typical meetings take about a half hour. I'm going to schedule it for an hour. I'm going to double every time I have something I want to put on my calendar. If I don't know exactly how long it's going to take, I'm going to build it double the time. So therefore, it's an hour. We go over that half hour. It turns into a 45-minute meeting, which happens more often than not. I actually bought 15 minutes of time by ending the meeting early, 15 minutes, even though in reality we went over by 15. And that extra 15 minutes of time is precious. And I use that time now to pull in extra work. And when we talk about control what you can control, and we have control of our time, we're really talking about, I call it the push and the pull. We put together this laundry list of things that have to be done today, whether it's real on a written checklist or virtual on a calendar. We say we have to get all this stuff done. And then when we don't get those things done today, what do? We push it for tomorrow. And we keep pushing and pushing. Well, it actually takes time to push. Instead, I say pull-in time. And I sat with this individual. I took over a new position many, many years ago. And I sat down with this guy and I said, okay, tell me everything you do in your day and you consider yourself successful. And he hands me a very short list. And he said, Tom, you need to do the least amount of work in the day and still consider yourself successful. That's what it's all about. And so I was expecting this huge, long laundry list, but in reality, he said, if you do these small things every single day, your day will take care of itself. And it was that aha moment for me of manage using the strategic approach. I have the least amount of work. If fire drills come in, I can't leave until this small list gets done. I walk out smiling, saying, I've got the mandatory things done. Everything else can wait. And so now I pull things in. So now I go through my list. I get things done. I say, okay, now I have an extra 15 minutes or a half hour or an hour. I'm going to pull things in that I have scheduled later in the day, later in the week, later in the month. And so now it becomes a pull. And it's now strategically more efficient for me because there are things that if they're not getting done, they can still wait. And I think that's important about managing your time. Don't let it manage you. You have control of bringing these things in.
We're talking with Tom Dowd. He is the author of the new book, Time Management Manifesto, Expert Strategies to Create an Effective Work-Life Balance. Tom, one of the things that I know about you, and you've certainly mentioned it before, is the fact that you don't wear a watch. All right, and I went through a phase where I didn't wear a watch either. I'm back to wearing a watches, but that's okay. Why don't you? And so if you can't watch the time, and people would say, well, that seems counterintuitive. Is he using his cell phone? How do you make that happen? How do you manage that time?
I stopped wearing watches because they got uncomfortable. That's reality. But I'm looking at a computer screen right now that has a time in the right-hand corner. I have a clock up on the wall. I have there's a BlackBerry or an iPhone, and we are surrounded by time. So it is very rare that I'm in a position where I don't know what time of day it is. But time isn't the clock or the watch. Time is concept. Time is about commitment, it's about routines, and it's about balances. So I use my calendar, and I think in terms of not hands on the watch, I think in terms of blocks of time. So there are blocks of time every single day, and this is the power of routines. Every single day at 7 o'clock, there's an appointment that's been popping up on my calendar for 15 years, and it says, read a passage from the book Don't Sweat the Small Stuff by Dr. Richard Carlson. I've been reading the book. It's torn apart because I've read it so many times, and it pops up every single day. And I know it's coming. It's popped up for 15 years, but it's the power of routines. And so I block off these times to go through my emails. I don't stare at my email all day waiting for something to come in. I have blocks of time throughout the day that I can do it. And so these blocks of times are now, they account for the amount of time. They may not account for the exact time. So every day I might, from 8 to 9, like to go through my emails, but periodically someone will throw an 8 o'clock meeting on my calendar. Not a big deal. I'll just push that to some other time during the day. So I manage my time in blocks. And the things that have to get done, whether it's going through emails, whether it's going through phone calls, these blocks of time account for the part of the day, and it's not about staring at my watch. You also get reminders. So if you use programs like Microsoft Outlook, for example, you're going to get these reminders. I make it a point to ensure that these reminders pop up, that I'm not sitting there staring at a watch. We overthink our time. We think in our minds multitasking of what I'm doing right now. I'm also thinking about what I have to do next. Well, I don't. I don't think about what I have to do next. If I'm holding a written calendar, I have it circled and I know what's coming up. If I'm on an online calendar, I know I'm going to either get a visual cue or a beeping cue, depending on what tool I'm using at the time. So you don't really have to think about it. And by eliminating thinking, and it sounds crazy, but by eliminating thinking, I'm actually improving my time management. I'm reducing my need to multitask, and I'm truly laser focused on what needs to get done. So when I have 30 minutes to get something done, I'm doing 30 minutes of work. I'm not doing 15 minutes of work and then 15 minutes of multitasking and thinking of something else that's out there.
You know, Tom, you bring up a good point. I think one of the things that people would say, and this is just something I've certainly heard and certainly struggled with at times, is that, yes, you can plan things out. Yes, you can put them on the calendar. Yes, you have the fire drills that happen. But the biggest problem is distractions. Things like people walking by to your desk. Things like, you know, the phone call that rings that is urgent that must be taken. And they just continue to mess up the plan, if you want to say the plan for the day. That plan that you had so articulately put out, all the little memos. I'll tell a true story. I remember I was one day I had this all planned out, a great day plan. I built in a little extra time, but I didn't anticipate not only a fire drill, but I thought the entire building on fire. Pretty much all hell broke loose, right? All the calls came in, emails are flooded, all these things had to be done, and I literally blew up the plan. And at the end of the day, I had like 9 messages saying, hey, you need to still do this. How do you make that work? How do you manage the distraction part?
Delicately. You say the phone rings. I answered the call from my wife the other day.
Congratulations, you're still married, clearly. Good job.
And I said, and it's interesting because I've always had a phone that you can see the display who's calling. And in my new role, my phone doesn't have a display on it, so I never know who's calling. So I was waiting for a different call. And my wife calls, and I said, sorry, honey, I've got to go. And she said, then don't answer your phone. And it's a good indication of if you don't have to do something, you can say no. You don't have to answer the phone. You don't have to look at your email every single time. And this comes back to communication. You know, if people know you well enough and you're building the right relationships with your business partners, with your colleagues, with your boss, you're going to say, I say to them when I'm working with the new business partners from this year, I said to them, I will never send you an email that says urgent. I will never say you have to do something now with it. And if I do, I'm going to pick up the phone and let you know it's sitting in your email, or I'm going to send you an instant message. I'm going to delicately let you know that there is a fire drill going on. So I have to practice what I preach in leading this effort. Now, if you're a recipient of this, we already talked about doubling your time. So if you typically spend an hour on email every day, you should block off 2 hours of time somewhere on your calendar, and then you can buy some time back if you need to. The disruptors, you know, are you accounting for the water cooler conversations? Are you accounting for the hallway conversations? And I work in an office by myself. I work virtually, and so I speak to people all day on the phone. So I rarely have that hallway conversation. And I go down to the office with all of my peers every couple of weeks, and I have to account for extra time on those days. I was down there yesterday, and I was chatting with someone about something that was business-related. It wasn't on my calendar, but yet it took 15, 20 minutes of going through something we were working on together. That's 20 minutes that was not part of my calendar, and it's probably a conversation we wouldn't have had if I hadn't been in the office. So there was value to the conversation,
sure,
but
sure,
I didn't account for it. But because I had doubled the time on some other things, I was able to adjust. And flexibility is an extremely important part of your day. If you schedule 8 hours in your day, and every single one of those minutes of those 8 hours is accounted for, I give very few promises. I promise you will not get everything done that you had scheduled in those 8 hours.
Not going to happen.
It's not. So schedule 6 hours worth of your day and leave some extra time to account for these. And if you don't have any fire drills, congratulations, and start pulling in the extra work. You will be productive, I promise. But there's an interesting thing about the interruptions. And I saw or heard this statistic so many years ago, so I can't give it the appropriate credit that it deserves. But I heard that it takes 7 times longer to do something or get back to that original thought if you're interrupted. So if I'm concentrating on a project and the phone rings and I answer the phone and it's a wrong number, I say wrong number, or it's a political call.
Oh,
all
God,
those calls we were getting all week. you get the call and you say, gee, sorry, and you put it back and you go back to focus on where you were, it's going to take you a long time to come back to that original thought. That's wasted time.
No, it absolutely is. And we're talking with Tom Dowd. He's the author of the new book, The Time Management Manifesto. Where can people find your book?
They can find it on Amazon.com. It's in e-form and in book form. And they can also find it on TransformationTom.com.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And I do encourage people to go there. Tom is a great guy. I know him personally. We've known each other for quite a while. And you always write great books that are very helpful to individuals. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about, this has been a question that always comes up when it comes to time management. Are checklists really a good or bad thing?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it is a matter of style and preference, and there is no right or wrong answer, but if you use them effectively, they can be good. You know, I actually use a blend of a written calendar for the things that have to be done today with an Outlook calendar along with my smartphone, and you can do all of the above, and you just have to get used to what you're using in front of you. And they're good for routines. So when I pack for a trip, for example, I have a checklist. And I have a summer checklist. You make sure you have the sunglasses and flip-flops. I have my winter checklist, bring my hat and gloves. And I have my business checklist, is make sure you pack the tie, because there was one time when I didn't. And what happens is it becomes this mundane routine. So use checklists for that to ensure that you're covering all the small details. You don't want to recreate the basics that are out there or forget those little things. You know, you go to the grocery store, you want a list to go in, it's going to save you time. It's actually going to save you money as well. And when you use these types of checklists, where checklists turn into a bad thing is when they become this accomplishments list, because we tend to gravitate to the easiest things. We look at the hard things and we say, I just don't have time for that. So what we do is we check off these little things that aren't really or necessarily productive.
Yeah, it's that endorphin rush, right? That very excited,
yeah, exactly.
Woo, we got something to check off.
I checked these things off, but if you were really truly challenging yourself, and this is what I would ask anyone to do, is truly challenge yourself. Looking at your to-do checklist over the last several days and ask, are they really productive, or are you spending time moving things day to day to day? If that's the case, you really want to revisit pushing the tasks and really figuring out, is there a way to stop pushing and start to pull?
You know, the only other part to this that I want to just add before we go to the next question is, really, there are so many places now that you can get checklists and reminders, phone, email, you know, whatever it is that you use. How do you manage all that?
You get used to it. There is a calendar. I have a separate calendar for speaking engagements, for coaching sessions, for radio interviews. And I blend that together with the work and the life, and you have to be able to blend those together. If you don't, you're really living separate lives, and what happens is you're running parallel to that, and you have to find a way to intersect them. You know, it's interesting on how I look at managing work-life balance. When I was looking for a title of the book, people were actually saying, do you want to call it work life or do you want to call it life work? And I thought it was a really interesting pondering question, because many people, including myself, would have very strong calendar habits at work. But I would not, I almost forget about the home piece. I'd come home, my wife gives me a honey to-do list, which she doesn't do that often, but when she does...
You said that for self-preservation. Come on, let's be honest.
She's listening.
Yeah.
But I had this work-life separation between my calendars, and my home one was much weaker. So to answer your question is, you have to find what's comfortable for you. You can't forget about one or the other, but you learn that if you assess yourself, you really start to figure out what works best for you. I don't use my smartphone calendar often. In fact, one of the things that I'll do is I bring up my Outlook calendar every single day, and I print it, because there are going to be times where I will be walking away from my office and not be in front of my laptop, And I just need to know what's in front of me at all times. So I balance those together, and it works for me. And it's tough to tell someone. You have to figure out what you're comfortable with. But go ahead and what you want to assess is what's worked for you.
Right.
And then keep doing those, and you really have to assess what hasn't worked for you. And then you figure out you need to stop doing that.
Well, you know, talk about work-life balance. How do you really balance work and family?
my wife gives me the honey-do list, and I really was weaker on my home one. Like, she'll say, hey, I asked you to do this. Have you done it yet? And I'll say, oh, no, I haven't, because I didn't throw it on my calendar, because I had this mentality of go home, relax, I'm not working, and I really had complete separation between the two. I found out I had to blend them together. And so you start thinking, you have kids' sports games, you have music recitals you want to go to, you have school events, and I would never miss those. The point was, and I wasn't missing them, the point was they popped up to me and they surprised me. That's where time management goes awry.
You're right. That's the key. No, there's no question. That is
when
true.
When things become unexpected,
right.
And people a lot of times are afraid to blend the two. We need to understand that you can't have an effective life balance until we commit to do both simultaneously. You know, I give higher priority now to the life events and my appointments, but I blend both of those together. And when we do that effectively, we can plan better. We can work around those unexpected things that come in. We can actually work around the things that have come in. If somebody gives you something to do, whether it's your spouse or whether it's the boss, you have the right and probably obligation to ask, how important is it? How urgent is it? If
I
choose not to do this by the given time frame, what are the ramifications? If someone says, you're fired, guess what? I'm working late that night.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
But if I say, hey, what happens if I don't do this? They say, well, get it to me when you can. Great, you'll get it within the next 48
absolutely.
Hours. You know, we're in good shape. It still comes down to relationship building the trust and communication.
We're talking with Thomas Dowd, and we're talking about his new book, Time Management Manifesto. You know, Tom, as we wrap up here in the last minute and a half, what are some of the principles of time management that you want to leave the audience with today?
I'll start with stop looking for the secrets of time management. They're not there. The secrets are commitment, committing to the time that you said you were going to do something, routines. So you build these habits and you have a balance between work and life and you understand the two. We've talked about smartphones today. Technology is not going to save you. Technology is a tool. It is only a gadget. It is not time management and it's not the solution. Your commitments and routines and balance are your solutions. We want to separate as much as we want to separate personal and professional lives. You can't. They're intertwined. And when you understand that, you start embracing it. The people often struggle with time management because we overcomplicate it. And as I've taught time management over the last 15 years or so, I've really taken the approach of oversimplify it. You know, get to the point where you're simplifying it, not overcomplicating, and ask for help. Don't make it be too late for you to go to your boss and say, I didn't get this project done by the deadline. Talk to them ahead of time. Make sure they understand that what is on your plate and prioritize together. You build respect that way. You build trust that way, and you're not going to be buried because of it. You know, people, when they do ask for help, unfortunately ask too late. Stay ahead of the game. Let people know exactly what's out there, and you'll all get through it together.
No, that's great advice. Tom, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And everybody should go right now to Amazon.com, look under Time Management Manifesto. Tom Dowd, that's D-O-W-D, make it happen, buy that book. Tom, have a great day.
Dave, thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan?
I like bronze, like my tan.
Are sunburns covered?
Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Susan Dench, and she's the author of Connetworking, the Savvy Women's Guide to Turning Small Talk into Big Business. She is a veteran marketeer, training and development professional, writer, and master of the art of conversation. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, David.
Hey, you know, and I'm glad to have you back. You know, we're talking today about your new book, Connetworking. It's an interesting term, C-O-N-N-E-C-T-W-O-R-K-I-N-G. No spaces in there, ladies and gentlemen. The Savvy Women's Guide to Turning Small Talk into Big Businesses. Susan, tell me a little about your book.
Well, I think Connetworking is really a combination of networking and connecting. And I think, you know, networking is really old thing, but what we're doing now is taking it up to a whole new level and really connecting and making personal connections through networking. And I think one of the great ironies in this world, we're hyper-connected. We have more ways than ever to communicate with each other. And yet the one thing that we're really craving is personal connection. And this book was really born of seeing people struggle with that and figuring out how they can make a personal connection.
Do you see this being generational at all, where you do have, I mean, heck, I know my son texts when his girlfriend's sitting next to him, and they have a talk through texting, or maybe they're doing it through one of the social apps. I don't know, but they mostly have conversations that way. You see it more and more. They're using, you know, apps, they're using social media, they're using texting. They're not speaking to one another. So they would tell you they're connecting just fine.
Well, you know, they would tell you that, except for when they get into the dating world, there are some studies that are coming out now that kids in their 20s are actually having a really hard time dating because they're not used to that face-to-face conversation. As you said, they're used to really doing texting, and it's a really sad commentary when you go out to dinner and you see people at the table instead of having a face-to-face, eye-to-eye conversation, they're texting each other. And we went to go see my brother up in Chicago and had a really interesting experience. We went to a bar there called Guthrie's, and it's all takeout from the local restaurants, and the only thing they really provide is liquor. And the neat thing about it is you walk in, and there's just this wall of board games in there. And it's really a place for people to come in, to sit down, to connect with each other, to have conversation, to play, to have fun. And we did not see one cell phone out the entire time that we were there. And there was a line down the block when we left. It was just absolutely amazing. And you're starting to see some of these things pop up throughout the country. People just want to get back to face-to-face communication. How do you make that personal?
Well, you know, you wrote this book, obviously, and targeted women.
Yes.
So tell me why you targeted women.
Well, in a lot of the things that I've done work-wise and so on, what I've noticed is that women seem to have more of a confidence issue than men do. And so what we see is that they don't feel as confident in what they're doing. And even in the workplace, what we see is that there was a Harvard study that 77% of women, instead of thinking that connections can help them, information can help them, and all the things that networking brings to them, what they think is that keeping their nose to the grindstone and really working and doing a good job, which all those things are very important, but you have to let somebody know that your work is great, and otherwise you're never going to get ahead. And that becomes a real problem. Amy Cuddy is a professor down at Harvard, and she actually has the most popular TED Talk of all time, and she talks about a confidence issue, and she talks about power stancing and getting out there and sort of like Wonder Woman, you know how they put their hands on the hips and so on, or you put your hands up, and then actually they're actually finding that even people who are sight impaired, who have never seen, if they win a race or they do something really wonderful, they automatically put their hands up or something to make themselves feel and look bigger. And there's actually the work that she has done, that Dr. Cuddy has done, shows that if you try to make yourself bigger and more confident, you actually, there is a surge of testosterone and some other hormones that actually, for 2 minutes, you just do these stances for 2 minutes, and you actually have that feeling of confidence. So so really, it's noting that women were not as confident as men. They tend to not speak up as often at work. If you're in a meeting, they don't put their hand up as much. They tend to finish their sentences with a question, and they're just not quite as confident, and that comes through. And I think that's one of the things that we need to work on as women in breaking more glass ceilings.
So you're an employer, you're dealing with these issues with your employees. Maybe they're not as confident, or they're not speaking up as much. Is this a problem for HR? I mean, really, does HR need to worry about how employees communicate that well? And what are the issues that they face?
Well, I think there's another study that's been done, and it shows that 87% of C-suite leaders, one of the biggest threats to their business that they perceive is the lack of engagement. First of all, you've got to find employees, then you've got to retain them, and you've got to engage them. And there have been studies showing that about 70% of employees are either actively or disengaged or actively disengaged. Now, you think about that when they come to work and they're just there for a paycheck. But you need people to speak to each other, to share information. You need innovation to take place, which means you have to have conversation with people. You have to be able to work on a team. You have to be a collaborator. And when you don't have engagement and you have those people checked out and they just become part of the wallpaper, it really makes your business suffer. So this is a terrible business issue, and one which a lot of businesses are really starting to address. There was actually a article in the Wall Street Journal recently, and they were talking about now that people who do small talk at work, so they may be talking about sports around the water cooler, whatever it was. They were sending emails about, you know, let's just take a coffee break, whatever it was, to break down those communication barriers. Those people were actually much less likely to get laid off because management was perceiving them as those people who could take the information they wanted disseminated around the organization, the ones that if they had a message they wanted to get out, if they wanted to bring everybody along to an idea, and change management, of course, is all about bringing along people for new ideas. Those are the people that they went to and relied on. And so if they weren't a rainmaker, it didn't matter to them. They were very valuable to the company in other ways.
Well, networking is key. I've heard people say, I have plenty of people on LinkedIn. I'm connected on networking fine. So is that really a status to be looking at in terms of whether you can connect well or not?
Well, you mean how many LinkedIn contacts? LinkedIn is a really interesting networking tool, but I think that LinkedIn is a wonderful resource for finding jobs, for connecting with people, for getting into the groups and becoming one of the contributors. Because one of the things about connect working is that your goal is to become a trusted advisor, to the point where why would anybody go anywhere else? They have you as the resource for that information. And if you become part of the conversation in LinkedIn and you're helping other people to become successful, a rising tide lifts all boats. And that's what you're helping people to do. So the law of reciprocation says that if you help me, I'm probably going to help you. It's just our human nature is that we want to help other people. We don't want to owe people something. We want to make sure that we help our fellow man. And LinkedIn really provides a wonderful way for us to do that.
So it's an effective tool, but it's certainly not the full connection power. Right.
No, and a lot of that, you know, with the connection, I have the elevate principles, I call it. And the first one is to engage. And that means putting together a plan. Where is it exactly? First of all, you've got to have your goals, right? We always talk about goal setting. What is your goal? If your goal is a new position, then you need to know who is going to be hiring for that position and how do I get into the right room at the right time with the right person. So engaging someone, you've got to know where they are to be able to engage them. So the first thing is planning. The next thing is when you find those people, listen. So if you're on LinkedIn or whether you're in person, listen to what they're telling you. be present and actually focus on what it is that they're saying. Don't think about what clever, witty lines you're going to come out with. You've got to be able to sit there and focus, listen to what they want. And not only listen, how are you going to be able to help them to be successful? If they're telling you about a business problem, how is it that you can actually help them be more successful? And in fact, there are cases of people getting jobs by coming to people and saying, well, David, what kind of problems do you have at work? Let me help you fix those problems. Well, wouldn't you want someone like that as an employee? I mean, those are the kind of things that are success stories. Exchange information, share your contacts, share your knowledge, and be generous with those things, because a lot of people, you know, knowledge is power, but knowledge and action is powerful. So if you share your knowledge, you're going to make a lot of people powerful. And again, you know, that all comes back to you. Then you want to also become indispensable, providing a value. What is the value that you provide? When you have your elevator pitch, what is it you provide that no one else can provide? Because once you find that, that becomes your value, and that's why people are going to come to you. Another thing that I think we have to remember is our attitude. A lot of people don't make a choice to be happy, and being happy, being positive, being upbeat, being cheery, that is a choice. And even if you're in the worst job, you can make a choice to make a difference. You can be a janitor and you can be the best janitor in the world, but you have to make the choice to be that way. And it all comes down to attitude. Would you rather be in the room with an Eeyore that sucks all the air out of the room, or would you rather be in there with someone who's really positive? Then trusted advisor. You want to be the one that has the information. You're the go-to person that everybody comes to you. And so, for instance, if you're a wealth manager, you may not just manage their money. You may also have a connection at a camp that their children want to go to. You may know a good house painter. You may know somebody on a board they want to be on. So you become really the person. They're not just looking at you to manage their money. They're also looking at you for all the peripheral things that you can provide. And then on the Elevate principles, the last E is for extend. And that really just means to follow up. So make sure that you always stay top of mind, because particularly if you're on LinkedIn and you're one of, you know, 3,000 connections, you can't be, you know, friends with 3,000 people. That's impossible, but you can stay top of mind. And by doing that, obviously you need to make connections with them all the time and seeing how you can make them successful.
You know, it's interesting. Your book is really about, as you put it, about you, right? It's about the individual. It's about your success, your happiness, your future. We're talking about individuals' personal choices that they make. It's really not the employer has to do this for you. It's you have to do this for yourself, for your employer, for your family, for your life in general, right? We're talking about personal choice.
Yeah, it's all personal choice. And whether you're doing it inside the office or outside the office, you know, really, when you think about the connections, if you talk to anyone who's been successful inside or outside the office, they'll always tell you that, oh, I met so-and-so and they got me hooked up over here. Oh, that person gave me some information. Or if you're in the office, for instance, and let's say that your industry is in trouble, wouldn't you rather know people on the outside and get connected before you have to look for a job? So you want to make sure that you have connections in a wide array of interest areas. And the other thing it really does is it makes us better human beings, because you grow by knowing different people. You grow by listening to different opinions and different perspectives. Those are things that make you grow as a person. And then not only do you take that into your personal life, you take it into your family, you take it into your workplace, but you can also become a better member of the community, because then you can take that out. You can work for a board, a nonprofit, and you can take all those pieces of information and you can be a better person in your community as well. But it does come down to a choice. You can choose to be happy. You can choose to make a difference, or you choose not to.
You know, I got to tell you, Susan, I was looking over the book because it's a great book, well written, and it's simple and easy for people to understand.
Exactly.
Yeah. One of the chapter on page 49, it talks about conveying your personal brand. You know, personal branding is always a challenge, and I think it might be a challenge for anybody. But you mentioned that it's sometimes a challenge for women. Why?
Well, I think one of the things we're taught as women, whether consciously or unconsciously, we really don't like to promote ourselves, and you're taught really not to do that from the very get-go, because doing something like that would really be promoting yourself, and it would be boastful, and boastful is not a charming attribute.
It's a guy thing.
Maybe, but it's not really a charming attribute to anybody, but particularly, you know, women, the way that we've been brought up. So I think it's much harder for women, but I think it really comes back to, again, you know, when we're talking about about planning. Our time is very valuable. We need to plan where we spend it, how we spend it, and so on. And part of that is deciding what your goals are and how is your personal brand, what it is about you that is going to make you successful. And so really, when we talk about a personal brand, we talk about going through and talking about those personal attributes that we have that we can move something forward, whether you're moving an organization forward, your whatever it is that you want to do, what your goal is, and how is it that you uniquely can be that person that moves that forward. And then how are you going to convey that to somebody? So if I say I turn small talk into big business, everyone says, oh, really? How do you do that? So you really need to come up with your elevator pitch, which it could be one or two sentences, and it could be, you know, a couple of minutes. But you need to do something that conveys what it is that you do well, that nobody else does, that makes you unique, and that really showcases your skills.
So let's talk about that for a minute. How does somebody come up with an elevator pitch that talks about who they are and what they are within a minute or two?
Well, I think it's planning. You have to sit down. Winston Churchill said, I don't remember the exact quote, it's in the book, but he said something along the lines, if you want me to talk for an hour, I can talk right now. If you want to talk me to talk for a half an hour, that's going to take me a week. But if you want me to talk for a minute, it's going to take me a month. It's very, very hard to take all the things that you want to say and distill that down into two or three sentences, which are the most important. And again, we get back to planning. When you have somebody, you're face-to-face, you have only a few seconds to make a good first impression visually, but you also only have a few seconds to make that impression if you're talking verbally. Whether that's over the phone and you're selling something and you want to talk to somebody who's buying your merchandise, or whether you're selling yourself on a job interview or selling yourself for a promotion. And let's remember that everybody sells something. So I used to be in hospital sales, and nurses would tell me all the time, oh, I could never do what you do. I said, gosh, you do what I do every single day. You're selling care plans to your doctors, and you're selling your care plans to your families and so on. You sell, you just don't call it that. So I think we have to get away from selling being a dirty word, and we look at it as, how am I promoting my brand?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, only you are an expert about yourself.
Exactly.
That's it. So you got to make sure it gets out there. You know, one of the things I think is a very useful chapter on page 88 talks about survival skills for the shy. We do have holidays coming up.
Oh, and, yes.
You know, holiday time, the fun times for holidays. But for individuals and women, men, doesn't really matter in this case, these can be very trying times for them, especially if you have a shy personality, if you're introverted, if you're somebody who doesn't really like that networking thing, mm-hmm. quote unquote, the networking thing. And you're invited to parties, you're invited to go somewhere, and sometimes you feel like you have to go because, you know, it's the boss said that we really need to be at this event. So how do you handle that?
Well, I think let's first of all start with from the woman front. And a lot of women tell me that they have a really hard time, you know, connect working. They have to walk into a group of women. They don't like that. You know, we go to the bathroom in Paris, for goodness sake. So we don't like walking into a room by ourselves. But you know, when I talk to them I ask them, well, when you go to a party with your husband and you come home and you say, hey, I saw you talking to John over there. And what does John do? And your husband said, well, I have no idea. You go, really? Okay, well, where did John go to school? How am I supposed to know this information? And meanwhile, you were talking to John's wife. You know where they met. You know who her hairstylist is, why the house is on the market down the street. You know all the stuff about them. We're much better at connect working than we give ourselves credit for. So when we go into parties, I think we should remember what our strengths are, and that we're really, really, really good at picking up on things that sometimes men don't do. When you look at a newscaster, for instance, in the morning, or let's say, you know, someone's doing the weather. So you might just say, oh gosh, it's going to be cloudy today. Meanwhile, we're looking and saying, I love her hairstyle. That dress would look great on me. Those earrings got to go. We sit there and we size everybody up. But when you think about it, those are things that you can have conversations about, right? So you walk in the room. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had. Oh, wow, I love those shoes. And all of a sudden, this whole conversation ensues just because you've found a commonality with a woman, because that's how we roll. We try to find commonalities and you build a relationship from there.
No, you're absolutely right. And this absolute truth, and I'm smiling over here.
Because you're relating.
Because I'm relating to it, and I'm thinking of my wife, and yeah, all of that's absolutely true, no question about it. And I do think that, and it's true, that women are more observant than men. and certainly in a micro way, they're more detail focused. That's not always the case, but in a lot of cases, yeah, that's very true. And so, and I do find out that probably she knows more about the conversation that I've had with someone, and she's talking to the spouse, than I would ever know about the person. But there are social norms too, right?
Yep.
There are business norms. And I think part of that challenge at a holiday party is, where can you really talk about? What should you talk about? What shouldn't you talk about? So give me some ideas and thoughts around that.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a good idea to drink or at least drink to excess.
Well, and that, then I'm not going.
And that's probably one of the first rules of, you know, when you're in business, you are on. It's like going to a trade show. It's like doing anything else where you're representing your company and yourself and your own brand. So I think it's important to us to remember that what we're doing here is we are going in as business people. It's not the same kind of party you might go to as with your friends. So that's important to remember. The other thing to remember is when you're going in, again, you're building your personal brand or you want to talk to people. And if you're shy or you're talking to somebody who's painfully shy and you think, gosh, I'm really exhausting the conversation here. One thing you can do is you can go in and you can put them at ease. My husband is a lawyer and he has an utterly charming way to me of going in and putting people at ease. They say, oh, Brian, what do you do? And he says, I'm a lawyer, but please don't hold that against me. And everyone starts laughing and they all come out with their horrible lawyer stories. So it breaks the ice and it's a conversation starter. You could also say something like, you know, I'm a nurse. Well, what does that tell me about you? Okay, great. Well, we'll move on to the next topic. Or you could say, I'm a nurse at May Medical Center, and we've really seen a lot of sports injuries this year. Well, there you go. You've just opened yourself up to a whole different line of conversation. You can go on the medical side. You can go on the sports side. What are the reasons? So I think when you come in, you have to be a little bit, prepared when you come in about what you're going to talk about. You can always break the ice by I know it sounds silly and trite, but the weather. Where are you going on vacation this year? The other thing I've always found, and again, I know this sounds really funny, but talking about dogs or pets, because those are really precious to people. And I can't tell you how many people I've really enjoyed meeting through my dogs when I walk them every morning. I've just had a lot of great conversations with that, but it breaks down those barriers. And the whole idea is to break down barriers, that you're building a personal connection. It's not just a business connection, but now you're getting to more of a personal relationship. And if you're shy, it's really painful to have to do something like that, or it's very painful as an outgoing person to talk to a shy person and try and get that information, you know, get them to talk.
You feel like you're pulling it out of them. Yeah.
You do. But if you talk about something that they're excited about, it's amazing how animated they can become. And I know there was one person one time I talked to and I thought, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to talk to this person. And all of a sudden he started talking about gardening, which I had no idea who is a vegetable gardener. I couldn't, he was off to the races. So I think that half of the trick is just find something that they're really interested in. And again, don't talk about yourself. Talk about what they're interested in, because nobody wants to, you know, hold court with a bore. You're always looking, okay, how am I going to go over and get I've got to get a drink. I got to get out of here. But if you talk about what's interesting to the other person and make them feel like the most important person in the world, all of a sudden, to them, you will be the most important person in the world.
And that is great advice. Susan, thank you for being on the show. Where
thank
can somebody get
me.
Your book?
They can buy it through Amazon. They go to Connect Working. They can go on to the website. My business is called the Connect Works Academy. So they can go to theconnectworks.com and they can purchase it from there as well.
Or they can go right to the HRPowerHour.com. We will have a link directly to that book for them and directly to you. Susan, thank you for being on the show once again.
Thank you for having me.
And I understand you have another book coming up later. We promise we'll get you on for that.
I'll look forward to it.
And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. Are you attracting candidates on the go with a complete mobile experience? Did you know that 86% of job seekers use mobile devices for job seeking? Reduce candidate drop-off and showcase your employment brand by adopting mobile-optimized responsive design technologies. Provide candidates with a consistent application process, whether they are on the computer, phone, or tablet. And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.